Have you ever looked down from 3,000 feet and thought, yeah, I could land there, no problem? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, and this is Radio Hanger. Today we are going to talk about the moment on your check ride when the examiner pulls your throttle to idle and says those three words, simulated engine failure. This is one of the most commonly busted maneuvers on the private pilot practical test. And it is not because students do not know it is coming. Everyone knows it is coming. You have practiced it a dozen times, maybe more. And yet, when the examiner reaches over and pulls that power back, something happens in your brain. Your plan evaporates. Your eyes go wide. And about 45 seconds later, you are pointed at a field you cannot reach with no plan B. Let's walk through this together and figure out why it goes wrong, what the examiner actually wants to see, and how you can nail it every single time. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. aviationsoul.com. All right, so the examiner pulls your power. What is the very first thing you should do? And I mean the very first thing, before you even think about where you're going to land. Pitch for best glide speed. This is where most students get it wrong right out of the gate. They hear the engine go quiet, and their eyes immediately go to the ground. They start scanning for a field, they start turning. And while they are doing all of that, the airspeed is doing whatever it wants, usually bleeding off because the nose is still pitched where it was in cruise. And now without power, the airplane starts slowing down. Or sometimes the nose drops and they pick up speed, which means they are trading altitude they desperately need for airspeed they do not want. In a Cessna 172, best glide is about 68 knots depending on weight. In a Piper Cherokee 180, it is around 76. You need to know this number cold, not from a chart, not from your kneeboard, from memory. The examiner will notice if you have to look it up. Pitch for best glide, trim for it, get the airplane stabilized. This takes maybe 5 seconds, and those 5 seconds buy you the most important thing you have in an engine failure. Time. Here is something I wish someone told me when I was training. The airplane does not fall out of the sky when the engine quits. A Cessna 172 at best glide will cover about 1.5 miles for every 1,000 feet of altitude. So from 3,000 feet above the ground, you have roughly 4.5 miles of reach in any direction. That is a circle 9 miles across. You have options. You just have to be calm enough to use them. Now, once you are trimmed and stable, that is when you pick your field. And this is mistake number two. Students pick terrible fields. I have seen students aim for a parking lot next to a shopping mall. I have seen students pick a field on the other side of a ridge they cannot possibly glide over. I have seen students pick a beautiful green rectangle that, on closer inspection, is a pond. The examiner is not going to take you all the way to the ground on this maneuver, but they can tell from your heading, your altitude management, and your approach path whether you would have actually made that field or not. So what makes a good field? Here is your checklist. Length. You want something long enough to land and stop. 1,000 feet minimum. More is better. Surface. Flat, firm, and clear of obstructions. A freshly harvested farm field is ideal. A plowed field will work, but it will be rough. Tall crops are bad. Trees are obviously bad. Slope. You want to land uphill if you can, but a flat field works fine. Wind. You want to land into the wind, which means you need to know which direction the wind is blowing. Think about it now, before the engine quits. Which way was the wind on your last ATIS check? Which way were the clouds moving? Which way is the smoke drifting from that chimney down there? And here's the big one that catches so many students. Obstacles on the approach end. You can pick the most perfect field in the county, but if there is a line of 80-foot trees on the side you need to approach from, you are not landing in that field. You are landing in those trees. Always check what is between you and your chosen touchdown point. The Airman Certification Standards for the private pilots say the examiner is looking for you to establish and maintain best glide speed, identify a suitable landing area, and plan an approach that accounts for wind. But here is what the standards do not spell out that every examiner will tell you. They want to see a plan. They want to see you thinking out loud. Talk. Seriously. Talk through your emergency. Say it out loud. Best glide, 68 knots, trimmed. Wind is from the southwest. I'm picking that field at my 10 o'clock, about 2 miles out. Looks like a hay field. No obstructions on the approach end. I am going to set up a left pattern to land to the southwest. When you verbalize your plan, two things happen. First, the examiner knows you're not just staring out the window in a panic. Second, and this is the sneaky benefit, talking forces your brain to organize. It slows down the adrenaline loop. It turns chaos into a sequence. Now, let's talk about the approach itself, because this is mistake number three, and it is a big one. Students set up too far away from the field and come up short, or they set up too close and end up too high with no way to lose altitude. Here is the key concept. Fly a pattern. You practice traffic patterns every single flight. An engine-out approach is just a traffic pattern without power. Fly to a point where you can set up a downwind leg at roughly 1,000 feet above the field. A beam your intended touchdown point. Then turn base, then turn final. The geometry is the same geometry you already know. The difference is you cannot add power if you get it wrong. So you need to manage your altitude with two tools, your distance from the field and your use of flaps. Here is the rule that will save you. If you are high, you can always lose altitude. Slip the airplane, add flaps. Widen your pattern, S-turn on final, you have options. But if you're low, you're out of options. You cannot stretch a glide. Pulling back the yoke does not make you go farther. It just makes you go slower. And then you stop flying, and now you're in a stall 100 feet above the ground, which is infinitely worse than landing in the field short of your target. So when in doubt, stay high. Set up your pattern close to the field. Keep your base leg tight. You can always dump altitude on final. You cannot get it back. Let me give you a scenario I have seen play out more than once. Student is cruising at 3,500 feet. Examiner pulls the power. Student pitches for best glide. Good. Student looks around, spots a nice field about 3 miles to the north, starts heading toward it. The field looks great. Long, flat, no trees. But it is 3 miles away. At best glide, the student is losing about 700 feet per mile. 3 miles means 2,100 feet of altitude, lost just getting there. The student started at 3,500 feet above sea level, but the field is at 800 feet elevation, so the student only has 2,700 feet of altitude above the ground. After losing 2,100 feet to reach the field, they arrive with 600 feet to work with. That is barely enough to fly a pattern. One miscalculation on the turn to base, and they are in the trees. The better play? Pick a field 1 to 2 miles away, arrive with more altitude. Fly a proper pattern, have a margin. And this brings up another point that trips students up. Altitude above the ground is not the same as altitude on the altimeter. Your altimeter reads above sea level. The field you are aiming for has an elevation. You need to know the difference. On your check ride, you should have a rough idea of the terrain elevation in the practice area. If you are at 3,000 feet on the altimeter and the ground beneath you is at 1,000 feet, you only have 2,000 feet to play with. That changes everything. Now, once you have your field and your plan, there is a checklist to run. The examiner wants to see you attempt a restart. In most training airplanes, it goes something like this. Fuel selector, switch to the fullest tank or to both, mixture-rich carburetor heat on magnetos. Check both, try each one individually, primer, in, and locked. If none of that brings the engine back, you move on to securing the airplane. Mixture to idle cutoff, fuel selector off, magnetos off, master, switch off, but not until you're done with the radios and flaps. And speaking of radios, Squawk 7700. That is the emergency transponder code. And if you have time, make a call on 121.5, the emergency frequency. Mayday, mayday, mayday. Cessna 4726 Bravo, engine failure, landing in a field 2 miles north of Smithville, two souls on board. The examiner is looking for all of this. Not in a specific order necessarily, but they want to see that you have a systematic approach, that you're not just guessing. Here is mistake number four, and this one is subtle. Students forget about the passenger. On the check ride, the examiner is your only passenger, but they want to hear you brief them. Tell the passenger to tighten their seatbelt and shoulder harness. Unlatch the door before touchdown so it does not jam on impact. Identify the nearest exit. This takes 5 seconds, and it shows the examiner that you are thinking about more than just flying the airplane. Let me share one more thing that catches people off guard. The examiner may not pull your power in a convenient spot. You might be over a town. You might be over a lake. You might be in an area where the best field is behind you. Do not be afraid to make a turn. A 180 is fine. A 270 is fine. Just make sure you're not burning altitude in a turn that takes you away from your only option. Keep the bank angle moderate. 30 degrees is plenty. A steep turn bleeds altitude fast, and altitude is the one thing you cannot afford to waste. The students who ace this maneuver are the ones who practice it regularly, not just when the instructor says, "Okay, simulated engine failure." Every time you fly, look down. Right now, what field would you pick? Could you make it? Where's the wind? How high are you above the ground? Make it a habit. A game, even. By the time the examiner pulls your power, it will not feel like a test. It will feel like Tuesday. One more practical tip. On your practice sessions before the check ride, ask your instructor to pull the power in different situations, not just straight and level cruise at 3,000 feet. Have them pull it on a climb out, have them pull it in a turn, have them pull it when you're already low, maybe 1,500 feet above the ground, coming back from a practice area. Each situation changes your options and forces you to adapt. That adaptability is what separates a pilot who passes from a pilot who freezes. The airman certification standards say you can lose no more than 10 knots from best glide speed during the maneuver. That tells you something important. The FAA cares about airspeed discipline. If you're chasing the field with the nose low, blowing through 80 or 90 knots, you're wasting altitude and you're going to bust. If you're pulling the nose up trying to stretch the glide and the airspeed drops to 55, you're flirting with a stall. Trim for best glide and leave it there. Let the airplane do the work. Here is something I wish someone had hammered into me earlier. You do not have to make the perfect field, you have to make a field on the actual check ride. The examiner is going to have you execute a go-around somewhere between 500 and 200 feet above the ground. They are looking at your process, your decision-making, your airspeed control, and whether your approach would have resulted in a survivable landing. Survivable is the word. Not beautiful, not on the centerline. Survivable in a real engine failure. The pilot who walks away is the one who flew the airplane all the way to the ground, maintained control, picked the best option available, and did not try to turn a bad situation into a worse one by forcing an impossible approach. That is what the examiner wants to see. A pilot who stays calm, follows a plan, and flies the airplane. Most of the information in today's segment comes from the FAA's Airplane Handbook, the Airman Certification Standards for the Private Pilot Certificate, and a whole lot of hours watching students learn this the hard way from the right seat. You can find more training content like this at RadioHanger.com. Fly the airplane first. Always the airplane first. I will see you next time.